Today on The Independent, Pete and I talk about Notre Dame's latest commitment, quarterback Riley Leonard from Duke.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson in South Bend, joined by my colleague Matt Fortuna in Chicago. I think we both have kids home sick from school today, so might be an abridged emergency podcast following Riley Leonard's commitment. But I think since we last spoke to you, sort of behind the scenes look at how we conduct this podcast, we attempted to record something on Friday because
we did record.
We were assured that that's when Riley Leonard's commitment was going to happen. Since then, Blake Fisher has opted out. Bo Collins committed. Sam Hartman opted out, and Notre Dame announced its starting quarterback via a dancing banana. So
Mike Brown official as well for the boys.
Yes, and Dre Brown and Mike Brown official as the receivers coach as well. So it's been a newsy postseason here, and we're not even to the bowl game, which is an entirely different issue. But for today, at least, let's talk quarterbacks. Limited at quarterbacks. We can get into future roster additions and deletions later. But Riley Leonard, what do you think is Notre Dame's next quarterback?
Long time coming in some ways, because we all knew this was happening the minute his name entered the portal. Exciting and good on Notre Dame for getting this done. As Marcus Freeman said during his kind of end of season wrap, you know, you can't just go into the portal blindly. You got to do your homework on these guys before they go in, and people can interpret that the way they want. But, you know, it was no secret once Riley Leonard went in, and you expect him to go in with the coaching change regardless, that he was going to be Notre Dame's priority. And it took a little bit longer than I know me and you thought it would be. But ultimately, he is going to be suiting up for the Irish next year. And it's exciting. It's the second year in a row they're getting an ACC quarterback from the state of North Carolina. And, you know, it's interesting hearing from some people just in the media aftermath of this news, you know, who don't follow the program as closely. It's, hey, is this guy that good? Because if you look at his numbers, they're not. Like, and granted, This season was kind of a bridge season. He had more rushing touchdowns, 4, than he did passing touchdowns, 3. He had as many interceptions, 3, as he did passing touchdowns. And he lost his last 3 games. Obviously, wasn't himself. After Notre Dame, you know, basically knocked him out of that final drive of their game in week 5. But I do think he'll be better than Sam Hartman. I could be wrong there, but I also candidly don't think the bar is that huge to clear, at least as far as production on the field. I mean, you know, the season did not go according to plan. Wasn't bad, but, you know, there were moments where you were definitely left wanting more. And I'll be curious to see how Jared Parker and this offensive staff tailor their offense to their player a little bit more here, if that makes sense. I mean, I just, you know, Sam Hartman, part of why he left Wake Forest was to get out of that slow mesh RPO system and to advertise himself a little bit more as a pro style passer. And, you know, whether that was what Tommy Rees promised him, whether that's what Sam Hartman demanded, ultimately it felt at times like they were just trying to make a certain thing happen a certain way. You wrote plenty and talked plenty about the lack of play action. We didn't see Sam Hartman use his legs all that much unless it was absolutely necessary, like at the end against Duke. Riley Leonard is a more dynamic runner. He's a bigger body. We've seen what he's capable of. It's funny looking back at the stat book from that Notre Dame game, because you watch that game in real time and you come out of it thinking, wow, this guy almost single-handedly beat the Irish. And his stats from that game were
12 of 27,
but he ran for a lot of yards. 12 of 27, but 18 carries for 88 yards, majority of which felt like they came in the second half when he really wore that defense down. So it's different. It's definitely different. On paper, it doesn't jump off the page. But again, I think if you saw this guy at his best, if you saw him against Clemson in week 1, you're thinking, wow, that's a first-round pick, a quarterback. Like, this guy he's got all the tools to succeed at the highest level. And now we'll see what he can do at Notre Dame with that coaching staff and with a receiver group that's going to, you know, we knew it would look different regardless, but Slowly but surely piecing itself together here after what was a pretty dark, I guess, in first couple days after the Stanford game when there was a mass exodus to the portal.
It's Riley Leonard is a developmental quarterback, which is not what you think of when you think of like these big name transfer types of players, but and especially after Hartman, and I think even after Jack Cohn, like Jack Cohn was still developing, but I think there was more of a, this is who you are as a quarterback. This is, you know, what we think you can do. And even like when he got to Notre Dame, like it took time for Notre Dame to figure out what that actually was. I'm fascinated to sort of see what Jared Parker does with his playbook to change it to suit Leonard, how Gino Gaudioli develops Leonard as a passer. Cause I'm with you. And I sort of was exchanging messages with Dane Brugler, our draft expert at The Athletic, about, so did Sam Hartman improve his draft stock or not? And he's like, no, he didn't. He's the same quarterback going out as he was going in. The NIL stuff makes a big difference. Like it's not like it was a bad year for him personally, but in terms of developmentally, he didn't move the needle. So how do they do something different with Leonard to not only win enough games to make the playoff next year, which means leaning into Leonard the runner, but like, how do you develop Leonard the passer a little bit more? I'm going to be fascinated by that. You know, the receiver room's totally different in a good way. I think the offensive line will be totally different. I don't know if that's going to be in a good way. Audric Estime won't be there. Mitchell Evans probably won't be back for a while.
We don't know that about Estime yet, right?
We don't know that about Estime yet, but I should have been Doak Walker finalist. It's probably not coming back to school.
And
I realized Blake Corum did it.
Fair enough. But I don't know if Blake Corum will translate to the next level the way Audric Estime did. And Blake Corum was coming off a major major knee injury.
Good point. Which is another reason to go pro if you're not coming off a major injury.
Yes. Also, please, Audric Estime or whomever, when you make your announcement, good or bad, please make it less than 5 minutes and please give us a definitive yes or no at the end so that we're not calling SIDs and saying what exactly does this mean.
The best announcements are the ones at the end where you're like, what did he say?
Maybe on a letter, 30-second highly produced video with Xavier Watts and Ben Morrison.
Yeah, which is not insignificant for Notre Dame, for both those guys. One is somebody you're trying to get back who just won the Nagurski Award as a first-team All-American.
Yeah,
the
other one, I don't think we've talked since that happened, at least.
Yeah, the other one is if you just looked at Notre Dame's roster and said, who's your most valuable NIL commodity? It's probably Ben Morrison, in terms of what he could command. So, and I will say this is a separate part of the Leonard story. I mean, there are multiple levels here. One is like the quick and sort of definitive move to get him. One is the evaluation and development of him as a quarterback. But another one is just like sort of having the resources on hand to consummate the deal.
Right.
And I think Notre Dame has been very aggressive and smart with the NIL part of the transfer portal lately. These are not stories where someone's coming to Notre Dame, and I know Leonard said like a dream come true. Well, that you have to fund those dreams. And Notre Dame is, I think, doing a nice job of that right now. So I think that's something worth recognizing in the rapid roster turnover that Notre Dame is having right now, is that they're very organized on the back end to make sure they can get these deals done.
Nice pun there. I don't know whether you're attended to it or not, but dream come true. We'll go with that. I mean, look, they got it done. They got it done quickly. I mean, it was a different situation last year because Sam Hartman had a bowl game in late December with the Wake and no one was really sure what he was going to do for a while, but this one definitely went a lot smoother, at least on the surface, and was done quickly. And, you know, we've as recently as last year, I think, been, at times critical of this operations kind of aptitude for playing ball the way you need to play it in the year 2023. Mm-hmm. I do not have, subconsciously or not, I don't find myself with those same concerns at all anymore. I don't know if it's because of the Sam Hartman experiment alone or just how aggressive and open they've been about the changing nature of college football right now. But it just seems like everyone seems to be on the same page from a university and athletic standpoint, much more as far as like, all right, season's over. We're going to lose these guys.
What it takes.
These guys, let's do it. Good on them for going out and getting that. You tweeted this, and I think it's worth repeating. The opener next year against A&M.
Oh, God.
Former Notre Dame DC against a former Notre Dame DC. That'd be Freeman Elko. Notre Dame quarterback versus former head coach, Riley Leonard and Elko. Notre Dame OC versus a former top Notre Dame OC coordinator candidate, That would be Jared Parker against Colin Klein. They also made a run. Before they got Klein, they made a run at Mike Denbrock, which also would have added some spice to it. Shout out to the old staff, Heisman Trophy coaching, coaching guys. Or what do you got for that at LSU? I mean, I would take exception to Brian Kelly telling Holly Roll they're celebrating Louisiana as much as they would if they won a national title right now. I do not believe that to be the case, but good on Jaden Daniels and good on Mike Denbrock and Brian Kelly. And if Notre Dame wins, it gets an inside CFP track. You forgot one more angle to this, the Chad Clunder Bowl.
Yes. For Mr. Ops, Chad Clunder. It's definitely worth noting. But yeah, and I think that's sort of where the Leonard story is has a different level of intrigue to me, because it's like you have to make the playoff next year. Like it is one of those seasons where like either you made it and your season was a success or you didn't and it's not. So how do you get there while serving the quarterback that you just invested in, who doesn't want to go pro, and his strength is he can really pick up 3rd and 8 or 8 yards on 3rd and 7. Like nobody puts that in their draft reel. He wants to develop as a passer. So how do you develop him as a passer while also leaning into the strengths that are probably more likely than not going to get you to 10-2 against the scheduled Notre Dame plays? I don't know how you do that. All while your offensive coordinator, I think would be fair to say, is under a decent amount of pressure next year after the way this season went and how the head coach talked about it in the offseason, where he's just like, look, we got to be a hell of a lot better against the good teams that we play, because ultimately that's kind of where Notre Dame wants to go. They're trying to be a team that not just makes the playoff, first step, but wins in the playoff, second step. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, Brian Kelly did not get all that close to. And if you look at Sam Hartman against the 4 top 40 defenses he played last year, he went 67 of 123 for 797 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 5 picks. That passer rating would not be in the top 100 nationally this year. So that's, you know, how do you develop somebody, Leonard, so quickly? And like, I would say another thing is like, how many offenses do you watch in college football where they essentially are going to lose 9 starters and they come back and they're going to hit the ground running? Like it's going, like usually that takes a year. Like Joe Burrow wasn't Joe Burrow his first year at LSU. Right. You know, it's, it takes time with this stuff, and Notre Dame will have a very acute lack of time to sort of develop as they go next season offensively, because maybe they will, they could win, or even if they lost the A&M game, the schedule is such that maybe you can kind of like muddle your way through and rely on the defense for a while and get to the end. And maybe Riley Leonard turns it on in November, but it'll be interesting to sort of see Notre Dame build the offensive plane while they're flying it. Cause they're just not going to have enough time between now and Labor Day weekend to like be a completely efficient operation by then.
Now, conversely, I mean, do you think, I get there was a school of thought this past offseason, 22-23, where, you know, the OC search goes the way it does, and there's a sense of, well, look, they've got so much coming back. They've got Hartman, like, you know,
right,
this year, like, this offense can run itself, right? They're going to – and look, statistically, they did jump off the page.
Yeah.
I just wonder, rebuilding pretty much that entire offense next year, does that alleviate some pressure from Jared Parker and Marcus Freeman? And look, we're talking about Texas A&M. They're going to have more new faces, right? They're going to have an entire new coaching staff. That's a program that, again, outside of 2020, when they finished right behind Notre Dame for that last playoff spot, really hasn't done anything in our lifetimes.
No.
Not to underestimate the stage, but not knowing what both rosters and the entirety of both coaching staffs will look like at this state, I still look right now and think, like, it's a game you got to win if you're Notre Dame, even if you don't.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to that. I think it's
– like, it's not going to be Lincoln Riley's USC year one, where, like, you got the Heisman winner and you got all these transfers who are all awesome.
Maybe I have a blind spot for – not that I really knew Elko all that well here. I just think he's – a phenomenal coach, and has a track record in a way that a lot of coaches don't, of like, all right, how do I win right away, but like also do some stuff that's sustainable at the same time. But like doing it at Duke, and hooray, you beat Wake Forest at the end of the year. Oh, yeah. Or yeah, I'm saying his first year there. Oh, yeah, like the game against Clemson was phenomenal this year. It was also like very Notre Dame South Florida 2011, which we talked about before. It was like a freaky weird game. But like they were a tough out against Notre Dame. They were a tough out against Florida State when Leonard was on one leg until he sort of tapped out, understandably so. Yeah, I just think Elko does a really good job. And
he'll win there because that place recruits itself, and he's a really good football coach. And you add those two ingredients together, I don't think he's going to get distracted by the noise and the boosters and the fans. Like, they'll win there. To expect A&M to be playoff ready in his first game there, I think is
a they're not. It's just like, I mean, look, we watched Notre Dame on the road this year, right? It was a mixed bag regardless of who they were playing. Even the start of the Stanford game was weird. So it's like if you go down there and you muddle around for the first quarter, you're down, I don't know, 10-3, that place will be going nuts. That may be a tough one to sort of, even if A&M is like Texas 2016 good, opening weekend, it just weird stuff can happen on opening weekend.
But that was very bad Notre Dame team.
Yeah, that we think translates and it doesn't. So it's
tough. Notre Dame did. Their defense did.
Yeah, their defense unfortunately did translate. It just Riley Leonard leading the offense is incredibly interesting to me. I hope that Notre Dame fans are ready for some practice reports in spring and training camp where we're just like, ooh, okay. This still has a long way to go. And I would caution people, like, look, even if you look back at Sam Hartman last year, spring practice,
he was in a competition with
rough. Butner. Spring ball was rough until the spring game when I think they were able to play like three defenses. And even training camp, you're just like, all right, is this going to happen? Well, I mean, it turns out Notre Dame's defense was freaking phenomenal. And maybe we didn't appreciate that fully at the time, but it's going to be a work in progress for Leonard next season. Does Notre Dame have time for a work in progress in a year when you really need to make the playoff? And as it expands, as it's in year three, you want to take another step forward in year three under Freeman. That's why this move is fascinating to me. It's sort of a win now move, and yet at the same time, you're assuring yourself that you're going to return two of 11 starters on offense. You know, if you want to count Ashton Craig and Billy Schroth as starters because they came on at the end of the year, that's fine. But new quarterback, two if not three new receivers. There will be other additions on offense. No Estime, no Alt, no Fisher. The receiver room totally turning over. It's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how Jared Parker can put all those pieces back together when I think, unlike last year, we're all going to be looking for the reasons that they don't fit together. Whereas I think in year one, he kind of got the benefit of the doubt. We're like, okay, they killed Navy and Tennessee State and Central Michigan and like had a very good second half against NC State. And then Ohio State and Duke come around. You're like, okay, Ohio State, like game plan made sense. Maybe wasn't executed in some big spots. Duke, they just kind of pulled it out of the fire at the end. I just think the benefit of the doubt, I think, was sort of lost for Parker this season. So I'll be interested to sort of see if he can get that back with Leonard, or it's you just sort of have to like harden yourself against all the outside noise. And there's going to be plenty of them, which gets me back to one of the funniest things about Leonard. He may not have a bone rib, but necklace, but the story with his mom calling him or texting him that he sucks every week. you go look at Notre Dame message boards. Those can be some dark places. He may be able to check those out if he throws a pick at Texas A&M and Notre Dame doesn't come out on top.
How can you not like that story? I just,
it's so good.
It's relatable. It's so good. To me, at least I like
it. Let's psychoanalyze Matt Fortuna's childhood here on The Independent.
Let's not. To go over the letter book, if you will, 21 career starts, 13-8 record, captain last year, honorable mention all ACC in 22, team MVP in 22, military bowl MVP in 22. I think you got to be
a bowl MVP.
Well, they Buckner had the last two. Notre Dame
Buckner
had the
and Hartman. Yeah,
they're both bowl. But they're MVPs. Both what? Gator.
Both Gator Bowl MVPs. Gator Bowl, yeah. I feel like if I could find a place to put money on Steve Angeli winning Sun Bowl MVP right now, I would. If Tim Murray's listening to the show, maybe you can shoot us a text and let me know. But
you can find someone to take that bet.
Notre Dame quarterbacks, past and present, must be bowl MVPs.
And we'll either be playing football next year. Tyler Buckner apparently won't.
Yeah, there's that. I don't know if that happened since we last recorded about him coming back to Notre Dame, but as a lacrosse.
Oh, he's coming to Notre Dame?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's official.
I know he's going to play lacrosse wherever he
it's
goes.
It's sort of official. That's the plan right now for his transfer to be back at Notre Dame to join the lacrosse program. Not that I have a volume of lacrosse sources, but that's kind of what I've heard on that one. So that
Brady again, national champions.
Yes, never. There's never a dull moment with this stuff.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit. Riley Leonard will be interesting. It does seem like Hartman was an interesting personality. I know he was voted a captain. Leonard seems kind of a little bit more like one of the guys to me. Is that
what I was going to say?
Okay.
That's the vibe I get. Again, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like, is that good, bad, and different? I have no idea.
I know the weight guys love Sam and would do anything for him. Not that the Notre Dame guys wouldn't, but it's always different when you enter and you lock
shoot in for a year.
Grandpa.
Leonard seems at least like, seems like he will be an easy locker room fit. I know Hartman. Yeah. Again, captain, the Beats headphones.
The Under Armour shoes,
whatever. I mean, all that
stuff. I don't know if I said this before or not, but it felt a little bit like a stepdad, right? Like, hey, I'm going to buy you all this stuff, kids. And it's like, thanks. I'm still not going to call you dad. Yes. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Well, they voted him captain, so I guess maybe is that calling him dad? I guess in this.
I don't know. I mean, who's
trying to tease out?
Was it Kyle Hamilton? There's a really big player a few years ago who got named captain, and I guess I wasn't surprised by it, but it wasn't one of those guys you're always hearing about, like great, like unbelievable leader, and talk to someone on staff. It's like, well, yeah, he had to be a captain because if he wasn't, you guys will all be asking us, why isn't he a captain?
Yeah.
That'd become its own story. It's like, okay.
Jalen Smith in 2015.
The opposite of Reese his senior year when he didn't get one.
Yes. But yeah, I think Leonard will probably be an easy fit in that locker room. And like, look, if they they're still going through their opt outs, returns, Howard Cross,
great
put out his return announcement. Like, I think we've talked about in this podcast that he was going to return.
Watts Xavier is playing Watts, in the game.
Yes, I believe he will be returning. Based on talking to people, that's like the first priority to get back. After that, if you can get Mills and Kaiser, then I think that you can talk about, like, could this defense sort of pick up where last year's left off? I think RJ Oben is a defensive end from Duke that they're recruiting to come as a transfer portal candidate. He's not, I don't think he's has the resume of Javonte Jean-Baptiste from Ohio State, but, you know, rotational player built like you would want a defensive end to be built. That will be interesting. Obviously, coming from Duke, I think it's safe to say it'd be a good fit at Notre Dame. So, defensively, they're probably going to be led by their defense again next year. Maybe it won't be
going to have to be at least early.
Yeah, maybe it won't be as top five good as this year's one was. That's okay. You can still win a lot of games with a top 20 defense instead of a top five group. So it'll be an interesting season next year. And as you noted, like, all the narrative at Texas A&M over Labor Day weekend is just going to be almost like too much to digest.
Added Jordan Clark too, safety from Arizona right. State in the portal. I think 14 guys are out, only three are in, but that will grow too. Anywhere between 8 and 10, I would imagine.
I think that on a previous podcast, the initial outlook for Notre Dame was they wanted to take 7. Since then, that number has been adjusted up to 10. I think you'll get an offensive tackle, a defensive lineman, at least one, maybe another receiver, a kicker. Jeter from South Carolina is probably the guy there. I think he missed 2 field goals down in Columbia. So his experience sort of like a Spencer Schrader type. And then who knows? I don't know where they'll go for their best availables. You gotta pay attention to what Riley Mills does, what Jack Kaiser does. You would much rather have them return than have to go find a portal take to boost those positions. But this is the new postseason for Notre Dame football and everybody else.
Everyone else, yeah. It's not.
Yeah, you're just managing your own roster 24 hours a day as soon as the season ends. I'm sure there will be guys. There'll probably be one guy that leaves Notre Dame moving forward. We're just like, what? Because they're college kids and that happens everywhere. But getting Riley Leonard is such a foundational piece to whatever next season's team looks like.
Look at the recruiting news of this week, right? Like, Nebraska might flip Dylan Raiola from Georgia.
Yes.
Look at the number of blue bloods right now that don't know who their quarterback's going to be next year, right? Oregon got Dylan Gabriel. If what I'm reading correctly is true, like, Liberty made a big play for, because Liberty has more money than they know what to do with there, and are getting into the NIL game. But, you know, Kyle McCord's still a free agent. I know he's visiting Nebraska. Ohio State's probably in the market for a quarterback. USC is definitely in the market for a quarterback. I imagine J.J. McCarthy declares for the draft after the playoff. I don't know that, but Michigan. And look, Jim Harbaugh's probably going to go after an NFL job the way he has each of the last 2 years. Maybe he gets one this time. And I think that job alone and that roster alone and the movement that could come with that has the makings for one of those, like, late January, early February, like, all right, everything's up for grabs all over again, because maybe the best team in the country is losing its coach, and maybe they're going to make an outside hire. And there are a lot of good players on that team, and there are a lot of good players elsewhere. Whoever takes that over that team is going to try to flip. I mean, I just think there's only one coach opening right now. It's Troy, which, God bless Troy, I don't think is going to have a major impact on anything elsewhere. It's December 12th as we record this. I think there's always a surprise or two in that regard, and that just seems to reset the clock and the narrative for everyone.
Harbaugh's situation would be probably similar to Brian Kelly or Lincoln Riley, right? Like, where you just, when they make a move, when you bring in a Michigan or a Notre Dame or an Oklahoma to, like, the coaching carousel openings, like, that really sort of just resets everything. In some ways, that's a compliment to Notre Dame for getting the Riley Leonard stuff done early, yeah. Right? Because you're getting in ahead of the chaos that's soon to come later. And, you know, we'll see if like Notre Dame can keep its staff relatively together from here, especially on the defensive side of the ball. you know, Mike Mickens would be a commodity in this market for how he's developed. Al Golden, you know, we'll see what happens with the NFL levels, but doesn't seem to be, you know, we talked about Syracuse on a previous podcast. I didn't really seem to get that far. You know, if you can keep that staff together and keep your defensive roster together, then yeah, then we're talking about Notre Dame. Like they should have expectations of winning at least 10 games and going to the college football playoff in 2024.
Now Michigan could promote Sharon Moore if they're able to, and that would be the end of that. But I do want to ask, in the same theme of everything we've been talking about this show, do you think Freeman and by extension Parker and the rest of that staff are under more pressure entering 2024 or than they were this past year entering 2023?
Freeman, maybe slightly less. Parker, a lot more. Like I wouldn't couple them together as much as it feels like they're very linked right now. I think the pressure on Parker is immense. I think the pressure on Freeman after sort of a pretty good season, you know, like I'm not saying that no one's throwing a parade around Notre Dame for going 9-3, but I think they had a good season. And I think recruiting is in a pretty good spot. I think he continues to be like very well regarded on campus. Parker's the one that's like under an incredible amount of pressure, I think, this season. So it's like, I would say Parker kind of got, I don't want to say like a free roll his first year, but he had Sam Hartman. They got off to a great start, obviously stumbled again, the bigger games against really good, against at least decent defenses to good defenses like Ohio State and Clemson were. But I'd say the pressure on Parker is pretty severe.
Yeah, I don't, I would agree with you. I do wonder when we're in the heat of it, how a 12-team playoff will change the calculus. Because yeah, Notre Dame is one of those programs that is going to be playoff or bust every single year now, whether that's fair or not. And if they lose in week one or if they lose a game early and they're essentially playing their way back in or whatever the case, if it's a season like this one where it looks like they're still alive for it until they, you know, lay an egg
against the third loss. Yeah, the third loss will be the killer.
That's where I wonder, you know, will we look at this program and all programs in similar stature differently?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because like who's in that group? Notre Dame, Penn State.
Like Penn State, USC. For example, like James Franklin, and this is him spinning it, but like at the end of the regular season this year, he was like, look, I know this wasn't a season we wanted, but last year, this year, we're in the playoff. Like, yeah, which is true. Notre Dame isn't. And that, right, like that will be a big difference next year. It's not right now. Yeah.
This season would have been much tougher on Freeman if the playoff had already expanded. That's how I would view that.
Absolutely.
I think you come through 9-3. And look, they wouldn't have made it at 11-1, I don't think. Right? 12-0 would have been a question this year.
This year?
Yeah.
They might not have made it 12-0 if Florida State did at 13-0.
So, but moving forward, I'm not saying Notre Dame needs to make it every year in the 12-team playoff. I don't think that they're at that level, but what, 2 out of 3 years? Seems reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit like the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Like, you've got your Alabamas and Kansases, which are in it every single year, regardless. And you've got your teams like Syracuse or whatnot that should be in it most years or that are in it most years. Again, we'll evaluate this differently in real time, right? I think the people who developed a 4-team playoff got very lucky that this was the only year where it really came back to bite them. The math didn't work, but it never should have worked because you've got 4 spots for 5 major conferences. And now with automatic bids, that'll be different. And Notre Dame will be right there with the other 7. And most years, I imagine, will be right there in that mix, at least among the top 12, to qualify for an at-large bid. And, you know, if they're the higher ranked team, get a home game, which I can only imagine, whether it's any Midwest outdoor place, whether it's, you know, Notre Dame Stadium, Michigan Stadium, Beaver Stadium, those are gonna be really, really cool to see on campus playoff games.
Can you imagine this podcast being a preview of Notre Dame's home playoff game in 3 days
against like Liberty?
Yeah, against Liberty. Yeah, it's kind of hard to get your head around that one, but we're close. I mean, imagine a Notre Dame's home game against Oregon or, I don't know, Texas. Like that could happen too. Like how much fun that would be in mid-December. I mean, there's a story there that I want to write for The Athletic that I haven't got around to, but just like all the moving parts that need to be moved in the right way at the right time for next year to actually happen on the off chance that it does.
It could.
It'd be wild. Yeah. No, it could. I mean, I think that it should happen, but I'm just saying, like, maybe Notre Dame finishes
ninth
and they're on the road. Like, imagine going on the road for a Notre Dame game this week. It'd be a lot more fun than trying to book reasonable flight to El Paso. But
everyone might be playing in this one too.
It's just like, this sport is so messed up. I love it. I love it to death, but it is just a hot mess. And like at this time next year, we think we know how it's going to feel and look, but I think the 14 playoff sort of taught us we really don't. Like, you got to go through these things and experience them in real time before you understand how they feel and like what the unintended consequences of all this, I think, will be immense.
I mean, there's also early signing day, which is a week out.
Next week. Yeah.
I mean, it's the calendar's already crazy and unfair, and it's just going to get that much crazier. Someone point out to me, someone at the G5 level, sent me a schedule. I want to say through 2027, Liberty doesn't play a Power 5 team. Non-conference. They just made the New Year Six as without playing a Power Five team this year over SMU. And if that's a precedent that's going to be set, and I'm not saying these things are precedents, they've got more money than they know what to do with their relative to everyone else in Conference USA. Like, get ready for 12 seed Liberty every single year in the 12 seed playoff.
Good times. Good times. Well, on that note, speaking of that time of year, it's daycare/elementary school cold and flu season, and that has hit the Fortuna and Sampson household. So we'll wrap up this episode of The Independent right there. Matt and I will be back next week to talk about who knows what new roster developments will have happened at Notre Dame since we finished this recording. It's been a very tumultuous postseason for Notre Dame already. Notre Dame is going to look a hell of a lot different next year than it did this year. They're going to look a hell of a lot different in the Sun Bowl than they did this year, based on how
things are going.
Mike Brown.
The room is yours. All two of them.
They're coaching receivers. So a lot to cover, a lot to talk about. We'll get a guest back on here hopefully next week as well. So until then, thanks for being with us on The Independent. You can, again, as always, you can find the podcast on Apple, Spotify. You can watch our beautiful faces on YouTube if you'd like. Thanks for being with us on our podcast. It's been a great first year here. But until next week, he's Matt. I'm Pete. You've been listening to The Independent.